Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as we begin the program, just to remind you, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate our guests, actually our foreign editors. Sleeping schedule. He's going to be sound asleep as this airs live here on the talk station, since he is some 5 hours ahead of us. And as we begin the program, always like to know, what's the weather like in London? And good evening to you, Tom. And how is the weather?
Glorious. Absolutely glorious. I'm looking out at blue skies, nothing but blue skies.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Very cold.
Yeah, don't do that. The singing part
is... give you a weather report.
Yeah, well, the weather report's fine, but anyhow. Okay, so you said it's blue skies, but cold?
Yeah, it's cold. I've taken back to cycling along the river.
Mm-hmm.
I did 25 miles the other day. I love cycling in the cold, feeling the cold wind against my face. It's fun.
Well, a lot of people would be happy if you were cycling in Siberia, but that's another story.
Into the river itself, I'm sure.
Well, let's talk about first. I've got to start off the program with, and we were celebrating with you last week. Did you go down to the celebration related to the?
No, I'm not a Brexiteer. I do have friends who are. They're still friends, but sort of. My prediction is, because of the demographics in this country, that I reckon in 10, 20 years' time, it will be back in the European Union. Because if you look at the ages of the people who voted, those who were over 60 voted 87% to leave the EU. Those who were under 40... or 30, I should say. I think over 30 would sort of split. But under 30 voted 87% to remain in the EU. Well, of course, in 20 years' time, those people who are now under 30 are going to be the bulk of the population, and old geezers like myself won't be around to vote anyway.
The other aspect of that, Tom, is between that date and now, or this date and then...
you don't know what happened.
They will mature, and they will realize that it was wiser heads that prevailed in 2020. I know. And the important part about this, Tom, and I
think it's more a question of history, Lockwood, that, you know, the people who are 60 years and older, they grew up in an imperial Britain.
Right.
You know, Britain was a great power.
Right.
And they sort of think back to that. Whereas, you know, the people who are under 30 now, they knew nothing about empire. They, you know, just what they read in the books. To them, it's Europe that's exciting.
Well,
but not Uganda.
But wait a second, Tom. It also has to go with the issue of governance and the fact that the UK had relinquished control of its economy in many instances and control of its laws in some other cases.
I wouldn't have used the word relinquish. I would have used the word pooled.
I think I like the term relinquish.
And I like the term pooled. We're going to disagree.
Well, and that happens often. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're working diligently to educate Tom and get him squared away. Tom, the other aspect of the events, and that was Friday, was it not? Correct him on that date?
31st of January.
The 31st, yes.
It was a Thursday, actually. 11 p.m. here.
Right.
Depends on where you were in the world. It was midnight in Brussels.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it was midnight on the Thursday, but 11 p.m. here.
Okay.
So, you know, people were celebrating On Thursday and Friday, yeah.
Okay, we're talking about Brexit. For those who are not aware of the inside story on this one, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, an expat, that is, a U.S. citizen who's been living in the U.K. now for going on 40-some-odd years.
50 Tom, years.
50, my goodness, and I'm only 43. I don't see how you could. Anyhow, Tom.
Did I just see your nose grow?
Tom, the question has to do with the celebration. It was, in my impression, granted a more of a visual event. It was not the official event, because though the exit from the European Union is theoretically, or shall we say, I'll use the word theoretically, now a reality, there are a lot of final details that have to be completed before the actual. Am I correct?
So many. And so, in fact, it could still easily fall apart.
Right.
Because what they've basically done is sort of set up the political skeleton.
Uh-huh.
And the meat and the bones, or the meat and the muscles and everything like that, is the detailed trade negotiations that are starting literally now. Now, the problem with that is that Boris Johnson has said that we have to have a trade negotiation agreement by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. If we don't, he has threatened, we will go back to the no-deal scenario, which is not good for anyone. And so he's once again using that stick rather than the carrot approach mm-hmm. to try and beat the EU into an agreement as quickly as possible. It's quite possible that we could have a no deal at the end of this year. I think it's unlikely, but I think it is possible.
All right. The other aspect of this, and of course, let's talk about the celebration for a moment. Confetti on the streets. What was happening last Thursday?
There were people celebrating in Parliament Square, the people who wanted Brexit, everyone else who didn't want it. There were a few people who didn't want Brexit who turned up. The latest opinion polls actually show that a slight majority are now opposed to Brexit, oddly enough. And so, you know, the country is still divided. So they didn't want to appear, you know, too triumphalist because, you know, for fear of a backlash, basically. So it was a fairly relatively muted thing. I don't think it was anything like some people were saying. You know, Nigel Farage, who's a leading Brexiteer, was saying it's like VE Day. It wasn't anything like VE Day at all, because, you know, the country remains divided.
Okay, now the next question goes to what has been happening since the announcement. Has there, you know, do you see any change in the economy there in the United Kingdom?
Or is it's only been a few weeks. The big change or the big event was a speech by Boris Johnson and a speech by Michel Barnier, who's the EU negotiator, setting down the parameters for negotiations for the trade agreement. And basically Boris Johnson said, we will not abide by EU rules.
Okay.
Full stop. We will not. We will set our own rules. And Michel Barnier says, well, look, if you want to trade with us, you have to pay attention to our rules. You know, I mean, we've got rules, you've got rules, you know, but we're bigger than you are. We're 27 countries and you're only one. To be quite honest, you know, we've got more leverage than you do.
Has this resulted in any political challenges elsewhere in the European community? Because you've had other countries that have expressed some interest in probably disassociating themselves with or as a country from the European Union.
You have countries which I would describe as Eurosceptic.
Okay.
You have political parties which are described as Eurosceptic, such as the Alternative for Deutschland in Germany, and Geert Wilders' party in the Netherlands. But I don't think you have many countries which have, and also in Italy, but most of them will say they want to remain part of the EU. They want to have changes in the EU. They want to have changes regarding the euro, and certain changes regarding immigration and things like that. But most of them want to try and change the EU to fit their national circumstances. Britain is alone, probably, at this stage in wanting to exit.
All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us from London, England. Again, this portion has been pre-recorded. Tom, as we'll go to a break here in a moment, and we're talking about the European Union and the decision now by the UK to exit the European Union. Any indications that, for example, relations with the United States are warming up? We'll get to the issue of impeachment and the State of the Union address and things of that nature. But what's the relationship with now the UK and the United States?
Well, Boris Johnson is trying to work on that. As part of his speech that he gave, he said that the United States was basically a trade agreement with the United States was a number one target.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, he poo-pooed the idea that there was going to be any problem over agricultural imports from the U.S. He didn't, you know, a lot of people here don't like the idea of having chlorinated chicken, chlorinated chicken, and they don't like the idea of having beef that has been grown with hormones, hormone-grown beef, cattle, and various other agricultural differences between U.S. agriculture and British agriculture. And Boris Johnson says, basically, I don't see that as a worry.
Okay. Well,
now, whether or not, you know, the rest of the country will or the rest of his party remains to be seen.
All right. We'll get back to more here in just a moment with Tom Arms here on Look Ahead News. Viewpoints around the world. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Stay tuned for more. We're going to come up, start talking about the issues here in the United States in just a moment.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England. And again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. Also, I've got some meetings to attend as well. Tom, let's move from the events of the past week with Brexit. I've got to bring up the Super Bowl, but I'll do that a little later on. Let's go to the topic of the United States. So many things to talk about. I first am curious. We've talked about impeachment. And we'll talk about Iowa. But really, I want to start with the State of the Union address. By the way, here at the Talk Station, we're clued in. We're plugged into Washington, D.C. The SOTU address, State of the Union address. So has that been covered there in the U.K.?
Yes, it has. And obviously, the two things that people focused on was Trump's refusal to say I don't know about refusal, the fact that he did not shake Pelosi's hand, and Pelosi tearing up his speech, which, along with the Republicans shouting four more years, and various congressmen, congresswomen, whatever you want to call them, boycotting the State of the Union address. And so the focus has been on the division that continues, bipartisan division, which continues in the U.S., and everybody is very concerned about it.
Concerned? Why are the folks in the European community concerned about the division in this country?
Through this week after week, Lockwood, I have to repeat myself.
Please.
Because the United States is the world's largest economy.
Okay.
Because the United States provides a nuclear umbrella.
Okay, okay.
It's just a very important country.
We'll leave
so
it there.
You don't want it divided.
All
you
right.
want them working together, not only for the benefit of the U.S., because a good, strong, stable U.S., helps to create a good, strong, stable world.
To that point, did you happen to see or hear any of the comments that the president made?
Yes.
What did you think of his comments related to America greatness? Is that an in-your-face added approach to the rest of the world?
I think most people think that Trump is an in-your-face type of person.
Okay.
In a way, they're getting used to that. I think most people will give him credit for the fact that the economy is strong. There was a BBC fact check which pointed out that the growth in the economy started under the Obama administration, but it hasn't stalled. It's kept going mm-hmm. under the Trump administration. So, you know, if you were just voting on the economy, then if that was the only issue, I think probably people will reelect Donald Trump. And a lot of people here think he would be reelected.
Wow.
But the other issues, of course, you know, the other thing which is still being discussed here is the impeachment uh-huh. trial.
And of course, today, as we speak, the Senate is most likely acquitting the president. What's the feeling related to the impeachment trial?
I have a friend who's a blogger who was a journalist of the year, which is sort of the British equivalent of a Pulitzer. And he wrote a story which said, the headline is, the U.S. Constitution is worth less than a roll of toilet tissue.
Whoa. Wow. Why? Why would he say?
Well, his name, by the way, is John Marquis. He said the trial is farcical, that Trump, quote, has presided over the moral implosion of a once great nation that was undisputed leader of the free world.
Okay.
Recent events have shown that the U.S. is in fact no better than the third world holes, his word, that Trump is fond of condemning.
The other question I have for you, Tom, and this is a big one now. What is the conclusion? Is this over? Are people going to be no longer concerned with it?
I mean, that's up to you. I mean, people will be concerned about it. You can't make it go away. It's in the past. And the fact is that it's still unresolved. We don't know whether or not, because we haven't heard the witnesses. We haven't seen the documents.
It's immaterial. He's been acquitted.
It's not immaterial.
Yes. Well, no, it's related to all those other issues. Let's move on to other items. I want to talk about Iowa. And the caucus, has that gotten a lot?
Total disarray.
Excuse me?
That is portrayed as total disarray, and I should think Trump is absolutely right in saying basically the Democrats' organization of the Iowa caucus proves they couldn't fight their way out of a paper bag.
Okay, now the next question goes to the opinion about the Democrat Party by the European community, yourself included. Does it give you any sense that this is just a once-off disaster, or is there a feeling that the Democrats are losing it? They've lost the issue on impeachment, they've lost the issue on Russian collusion, and they're losing on the issue of just being able to manage their own caucuses in Iowa. Not a large state, by the way.
It certainly would appear that way, but I think we're at the very start of the primary season, and so it's a bit early to say. I mean, everyone is very shocked that Pete has done so well. You know, Pete Buttigieg. And by the way, everyone over here calls him Pete.
Okay.
And the reason they do is because they can't pronounce his surname, and that includes me.
That's an easy name. It's Buttigieg.
Buttigieg.
Buttigieg. It's very easy.
Difficulty too.
Very easy. Buttigieg.
How can you elect a man to the White House if you can't pronounce his name?
Well, we can. We just have to work on that relative to the rest of the European community. The other interesting thing about this, obviously, is the candidates themselves. Are there any indications among your friends in the European community and the press of a particular favorite in the campaign?
No, I don't think so. It depends probably on where you stand politically.
Okay.
I mean, my left-wing friends, which is not me, by the way. I know
you're off
on the far left somewhere.
Right.
But my left-wing friends are very much in favor of Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. My more center-left or centrist friends are more in favor of Pete or Joe. We find it a bit difficult to think that the American electorate as a whole would either vote for a gay person, that we don't think that the American electorate is ready for a gay person, or that they would vote for someone who is probably pretty close to being a socialist, i.e. Bernie, or even Elizabeth Warren.
I think you are reading the tea leaves properly, even here in the States. But we've got more elections coming. Is the European press, following the elections, literally going from city to city to give a report back, or is it just sort of a casual coverage?
They're on the bus.
They are on the bus. Wow.
They are on the bus.
Okay. So they're paying.
I mean, you have to remember, newspapers like The Guardian and The Financial Times and The Economist, they have international circulations. The Economist, for instance, sells, I think, 10 times more copies in America than they do in the UK.
Shows we're always interested in knowing what's happening in the UK and of course, around the world. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Again, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule since he's some 5 hours ahead of us. He already knows all the details that we have yet to learn because of his advanced knowledge and advanced age.
I certainly know more than you, Lockwood.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio, joining us from London, England. And it is nearly midnight as he is some 5 hours ahead of us, so this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. Tom, moving on to other items, we talked about Brexit a few minutes ago and, of course, the issue of trade negotiations. But you've got a note here, which I find interesting, and that has to do with a clampdown on jihadists in Britain. What's going on? Of course, we know that there was a recent stabbing again. We're going to have control of knives there in London, and particularly London, but throughout England. What's going on?
Okay, we've had two stabbings by jihadists who've recently been released from prison.
Ah.
Just literally within the space of a month between them. Now, what happens when a terrorist is sentenced to prison, either because he's committed a terrorist attack or he's been planning one?
Mm-hmm.
He goes to prison and he's entered into a de-radicalization program.
Okay.
And these de-radicalization programs do not appear to have been working, because in both of the last two attacks, within days of their release, they committed a terrorist attack and tried to stab someone, or did stab someone. In fact, they did stab someone. Both of them were subsequently shot by police. And the one who was shot this past week was actually being tailed by the police because they feared that he would conduct a terrorist attack after he'd been released. But because the parole laws are what they are, he had to be released. So, the government is in the process of trying to change the law so that terrorists or people who are suspected of terror, not necessarily suspected, but terrorists, can be held almost indefinitely, Guantanamo Bay style.
Wow. And now, how is that resonating among you and your friends?
In the courts.
Excuse me?
It's already being challenged in the courts. But there is certainly, I think, a strong public feeling that, you know, something has to be done. They've got something in this month alone about, I think, 30 other jihadists who are due to be released from prison. And, you know, they can't all be followed all the time. But at the same time, I think that if you kept them locked up indefinitely, you turn them into martyrs. It's a difficult situation, obviously.
The criticism of President Trump early on was this issue of being an Islamophobe. And I'm looking at this and thinking, well, could you apply that same argument to the British gendarmes?
No.
Why not?
No, because we're not just talking about Islamic terrorists. We were talking, the last two instances have been jihadists, but we are talking, there is a certain number of, in fact, there are just as many right-wing terrorists these days as there are Muslim terrorists. And there are in the States as well.
But
and
you say jihadists.
I don't think they're being de-radicalized any more easily than the Muslim terrorists.
Well, you're focusing on jihadists. I just thought that was important. Look,
I was, because the last two attacks involved jihadists.
Okay, all right.
Both of these jihadists by the way, were born in Britain.
Okay. Well, that's we'll leave it there. Let's move on. Next item. And let's stick with the UK for a moment. Sean Fain leads polls going into the Irish elections. And by the way,
Sinn Fein.
I'm sorry.
I was wondering what you were talking about.
Thank you very much. Sinn Fein. And my question to you is, does any of this have to do with Brexit? And, if not, what does this mean? Because, the relations between Sinn Féin and the UK, as I recall, have been rather bumpy.
Let's first of all, you know, describe for the listening audience exactly what Sinn Féin is. Traditionally, it is the political wing or the mm-hmm. political arm of the IRA.
Right.
Which is the Irish Republican Army, which has been literally fighting or was fighting for a number of years up until the Good Friday Agreement, Britain, in order to force the Northern Ireland away from the United Kingdom and into Ireland, the island of Ireland. For many years, Sinn Féin has been a very unpopular political force in Ireland. Most people would not vote for Sinn Féin. I think Brexit has changed that. I think it's changed it significantly. The reason is because they're going to be setting up border controls mm-hmm. because EU is leaving. And so it's not as important to have good relations with Britain. And Sinn Féin is arguing, well, now's the time to actually unite the two halves of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, they've had some polls in Ireland who are saying, or in Northern Ireland, who're saying, yeah, it's finally come. We've got to accept it. And I think that is a reason why Sinn Féin is leading in the polls at the moment. There are other reasons. Sinn Féin is very left-wing politically, and there are issues such as the Irish Health Service needs more money spent on it, which would mean more taxes, and there's an acute housing shortage. And so the Sinn Féin is saying, let's also spend a lot of our tax euros on building public housing. So it's a sort of a range of issues, of which Brexit or the reunification of Ireland is one of them.
Okay. Let's talk then about other items. Speaking of events around the world, how about political impact of coronavirus? What political impact are you talking about?
There are several impacts. Let's start here in Europe. There is starting to be a lot of prejudice against Chinese. They're blaming the Chinese people. There's a report about one Chinese restaurant, which a month ago was packed with diners, and last week only had two in the entire week because people were boycotting it. And this was in Italy.
That has nothing to do with...
The Italians seem to be really hard on the Chinese. There's a population of 300,000 Chinese living in Italy. That's just one example. The other one is related to the economic situation. They are saying at the moment, ooh, coronavirus has now hit harder than the SARS epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And in the SARS epidemic back in 2003, the economy slumped badly.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And they're saying now that the coronavirus could cause the Chinese economy to shrink in the first quarter, and we don't know how long it'll go on. If it goes on for two quarters, it will continue to shrink, but could shrink from 6% to 2% growth. Now, that has huge impact,
mm-hmm.
and it has huge impact internationally, but domestically, the government basically doesn't have any political problems. People are quite happy being told what to do by the Communist Party, as long as they've got lots of money in their pockets.
Right.
But the moment that money starts to go, they're going to start questioning the political structure.
That's a good point. And I had not heard of the economic impacts, well, first on Europe, but also on China. We're not hearing a great deal of that. And of course, not to be discussed right now in the sense that we know what's happening in China. But I am interested in the reaction there in the European community related to Chinese-related industries and businesses and restaurants. That is not happening in the States. I'm really surprised by that. I would have thought that Europe would see this as two distinct activities. One that you've got.
I think you have to be careful about referring to Europe as one homogenous unit.
Mm-hmm.
I think Italy is taking this extreme view. I haven't noticed any problems here in the UK.
Okay.
I think each country is going to be different.
All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're going to move on to other items. Let's talk briefly about Turkey and Syria. And I've got to throw in Russia because now.
Absolutely.
Yes. This is a big story. And by the way, let me just remind you the criticisms that the U.S. faced upon the departure from Kurdish area of Syria. And I think the president has been proven correct that he was just leaving it to two countries that were going to go at it eventually anyhow, Syria and Turkey. So and with the Russians sort of caught in the middle.
But he was there so that they didn't go at it.
Well, you know what? It's Tom, as you heard last night, the president said, we've been enough of a police force around the world. And I agree with the president on that very much. I'm very aggressive.
I didn't expect you to do anything else.
But let's go back to this. What's happening in Turkey and Syria? Because this shows that there's no major, maybe there's a peace initiative, but I don't think it's going to be very successful.
No, I don't think so. It is as the Middle East, has a tendency to be, extremely complicated.
Right.
As you know, Turkey went into northern Syria to set up a no-go area about 10-20 miles wide,
uh-huh,
in what was called the Aleppo province. And a lot of people thought at the time, wow, this is a bit odd. Is Turkey ever going to leave? Well, now,
no.
You know, they're doing the same thing in the neighboring province, Idlib, and they're using as an excuse a Russian-backed Syrian offensive,
mm-hmm,
which has driven an estimated 500,000 people from their homes into the Idlib province towards the Turkish border. And they say they're basically protecting the Turkish border. Now, this is also, as you pointed out, and I also have reiterated, the Syrian forces are backed by the Russians.
Uh-huh.
And the Russians and the Turks have been trying to get together a bit. They've got problems with we've got problems with the Turks buying defense equipment from Russia.
Right.
And it's a love-hate relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a possibility that the Turkish forces could end up fighting with the Russian forces. They're certainly fighting with the Syrian forces, and both Syrian and Turkish soldiers have died. Is this involved somehow or another in Turkey trying to carve out a big slice of Syria for its own purposes, and using the Syrian civil war as an excuse to do it? It's a total mess.
Well, it is, and I think it's proving that what we are experiencing now is.
But it wouldn't be a total mess if the United States was there.
No.
Would be a lot of people's argument.
We will leave it right there. Let's go to a break. I want to come back. We've got several things to talk about. I want to find out if you were watching the Super Bowl. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And in this final segment, I'm looking forward to hearing of the conclusion of a story, Indian car horns tied to red lights. excuse me. But we'll get to that in a moment. Let's talk first about locust invasion in Ethiopia. How big of a concern is that?
It is one of the worst invasions for about 50 years. I mean, it is totally destroying crops in the Horn of Africa.
And, of course, that's going to create a problem for starving people.
So that Eritrea, Djibouti, Ethiopia, they are really having difficulties with invasions of locusts.
And we won't get into the details, but what is happening now to assist the Ethiopians? And, by the way, the locusts will be continuing to travel.
Yes, they will continue to travel. They started apparently in the Arabian Peninsula and moved south. But, you know, the Arabian Peninsula is not exactly a wheat basket.
Right. But whereas Ethiopia is.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's wheat and grass.
Right.
You know.
Okay, so that is a major concern. Let's move to another item, lighten it up a little bit, having to do with the Super Bowl. Was that highly reviewed? And by the way, any comments about the Super Bowl, or more importantly, the halftime show?
Well, the halftime show was very much appreciated here. They all thought it was great.
Good.
As for the game itself, which was on the wee hours of the morning, you know, they were absolutely astounded that the 49ers could, Kansas City Chiefs, I can't even get it right, could come back the way they did in the fourth quarter. Very, very exciting.
Okay, well, I think it's fascinating you've been paying close attention to American football.
We now have 4 NFL games in London every year.
Right. And I think the idea is to expand this to be a world program, but it's going to be difficult because it's going to be competing with both the European version of football, we call it soccer, and of course, as you pointed out, basketball as well. Let's wrap it up, Tom, with the Indian car horns. Now, what are we talking about here?
Well, apparently the Indians are very fond of honking their horns. And as the country becomes richer, there are more and more cars and there are more and more traffic jams. And what they don't like is red lights. And so you see them queuing up or lining up at the red light and just sitting on their horn. And so the Indian authorities have come up with a rather novel idea. They've basically put meters on the lights. And so as long as someone is honking their horn, the lights will not change to green.
Ooh.
Don't you love it?
I do, I do. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, always with that special twist at the end. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us. Look forward to conversations next week.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.